Hey, this is James Chittenden. I'm a user experience evangelist for public sector and had some time to chat with Josh Blake from InfoStrat. He's created some really cool stuff around natural user interfaces, or NUIs, and this is one of his sample apps that does some pretty cool stuff, really around best practices for building natural user interfaces and what you have to think about diving into this type of technology, especially for those coming from very traditional, I'm in a browser, I'm in a standalone desktop. You know, how can you wrap your brain around good usability, specifically around Surface? So Josh, what is this that we're looking at?
I made this application called Surface Cube. And yeah, it's a game, it's a puzzle, but the design of the application was to demonstrate as many of this different Surface interaction guidelines as possible.
Okay.
And also, in general, you know, really for developers and designers, show you know, what's possible when you think in terms of natural user interfaces and kind of throw out what's you know, the old ways of doing things. So I'll start the application, and I'll go through the different parts very quickly, and then we'll kind of start over and explain and talk about the different reasons we made certain design decisions.
Okay.
All right, so we'll get started. And we have the puzzle. This is how we start out. These are just scatter view items. And
so what's this?
So this is how we start the game. And this is very informal, so it doesn't matter. All right, so we did this one, and then this one, and then here, and then you know that sound and the visual is important. And then this thing. And then, so we've solved the puzzle, and we have kind of this visual confirmation, and this thing spins around. You can play with it if you
So this is like a marquee in HTML, right?
Yeah, it's okay. It's the equivalent of marquee and the new blink.
That's sexy.
You know, I can put in my name, and so I did this one, and let's see. I guess that other one didn't save, but... yeah, so this is the end of the game. So let's go back to the beginning and talk about the different decisions as we go along. So let me get rid of that. And we press new game. Now, back when we started, these things kind of flew in from the side.
Right.
And the reason for that is, I mean, we've all seen scatter views and you know how to interact with them, but you know I want to show for someone who you know, doesn't know any of this, any of the interactions. You know, transitions between different modes is one of the important things to maintain a fluid interface.
Okay.
And if you have an abrupt transition, and we were looking at something that had that before, it's kind of confusing because you don't know how to go back to the previous mode, and go back and.
Especially when I'm used to a good old back button.
Right. Exactly. We don't want back buttons. We want to be able to fluidly transition, and you know maybe that's based on the positions of objects or other things. In this case, we start from a blank canvas, and these things come in, and the fact that they move, the first thing you see is them moving. It kind of indicates, oh, maybe these are scatter views. You can take a look, and you know, there's our leaderboard with no names. So let's talk about starting the game. So take a look at this, and I need to. There's a timer, so I need to let it sit for a second, but watch what happens. About every 20 seconds, this cube animates. And if I have good timing, then it should be in a, you know, a second or two. There's two things that happen there.
Okay.
One is it demonstrates that these two cubes can rotate relative to each other. And the other, it demonstrates that the whole thing can move as a pair, and as an object.
Right.
So, what that shows it shows the user what this can do, and the fact that you know if I'm sitting here trying to figure out how do I use this, I'm messing with the leaderboard. Every 20 seconds or so, kind of like how the Tract app with water, it'll kind of do its own thing. It has life outside of interactions.
Right.
So it has a little bit of life, and it'll do this every once in a while.
So and it encourages me to try this thing out.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then, you know, the other thing that we want to point out going back to this, is that so the icons, you know, what does this look like?
Fingerprint.
A fingerprint. So, you know, kind of think, all right, well, maybe this is something I should put my finger onto. And then on the blue side, we have this fingerprint and little arrow icon, which indicates motion. So, you know, if you put the two together, maybe this is fixed and this is motion. And if you play around with it, you also see this says start. So you have to think, all right, well, maybe this red and this, I put them together, it starts the game. And you know, we also have text, match colors to start. So there's many different ways, very subtle ways that this tells the users and kind of teaches the users how do you interact with this kind of object. And this is a 3D object, even though it's only constrained, it only has one axis right now. Mm-hmm. When we start the game, it's several. But we only want to show the basics. So, you know, we start the game. And when we start, these things go off to the side. And that's because the gesture that you do when you do this thing on the little cube, the mini cube, you're telling the application you want to do something, you want to change mode. So mm-hmm. the application should be smart enough to know, all right, well, you want to focus on this, not so much these things. So these kind of intelligently get out of the way.
And so you just subtly move them out of the
exactly.
way.
Exactly. And there's the animation about it, there's the kind of the rotate. And it's just kind of a pleasing thing to watch, and it's fun to go back and forth, do it again, 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 again. And then another thing, so with Surface specifically, as mm-hmm. multi-user, multi-orientation application device. So how do we, and you know, there's some things in the cube and the orientation of these things, how we animate them, the transition between this mode and the next one, that are based upon where the user is oriented. Mm-hmm. So if this thing is facing me, these things will animate down here, and the cube, the 3D perspective of the cube is oriented to me. So this looks upright to me, maybe upside down to you. Mm-hmm. And you can change it and whatnot, but just the default. Now, if you do the same thing, you know, go ahead.
Okay.
And since this was oriented in that side of the table, it says maybe that side of the table is the person who's going to be using this, at least initially. So as we start the game, and this fades in, another smooth, fluid transition. Mm-hmm. This fades in, and you kind of think, what do you think about the link between this minicube and how you interacted with it? And the requirement, you had to interact with that minicube in order to get to this one.
It's just training you to how to actually play the game
right.
in a nice, subtle way.
And that's related to the scaffolding surface principle. You want to slowly start with the basic steps and move up to more complex things.
I am horrible at this game, I'll tell you that.
And actually, when I was making this game, I didn't know how to solve Rubik's Cubes. And so I went ahead, I got a cube and a regular 3x3, and
I figured
out how to solve it, but I'm still kind of not the best, but that's why we're starting out with just four moves. So take a step back, and
wow.
What do you notice when you touch the cube?
It gives you a visual showing that, okay, this is now recognizing my point that I've mm-hmm. made on the cube, and then from the training before, I can now go ahead and try to match these up.
Right, exactly.
Very unsuccessfully.
Yeah, just like with scatter views, when you touch it, there's a subtle animation.
Right.
It lifts up, shows that you know it's recognized and accepts, accepts your interaction. Same thing with the cube, and it's different in 3D. We don't want to lift up the whole cube, but we're interacting with this cubelet, and this cubelet, and then you know we'll do something with it. There's a lot of really crazy algorithms and math behind the scenes to figure out, you know, this is a 2D surface, and we want to project into 3D space and find what I'm touching. You know, I'm touching this one in the front, not the one that's hidden behind it.
Right.
And also, so this is a manipulation, you know, moving this thing around, but the actual rotating the side, there's a little bit of a threshold, and so there's a gesture you use, and the same thing you learn down here. If you go slowly, it may not do anything, but if you go quickly, it actually does it. So
okay.
You know, you have a little bit of leeway to do stuff, but if I am doing a gesture, I'm trying to communicate my intent to rotate this in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
So my intent is indicated by swiping, basically. It's a hold and swipe pattern. So that's how we manipulate it. So let's start over and then try to solve the thing. So we'll do the four scrambles, so go ahead.
Okay.
And then you can figure out the final ones. All right, it was this one, and then this one. Okay. So now the next thing to do is move this one down. It matches these two blues, and this white side becomes completed. So on a higher level of directly interacting with this particular cubelet, we want to kind of reward the user as they go along and make little goals on the way to the larger goal of solving the whole cube. So if they solve a specific side, watch the interaction and the visual and sound. So the whole cube says something's happening. We've made a little bit of progress, and there's the sound that plays. It says mm-hmm. kind of lock it in. There's trigger, and then go ahead and solve the thing. Might be.
I think you can do this one,
Jim. So. The same thing happened and a little bit more, so kind of building upon the goal, building upon the feedback. So the whole cube lit up, and we can actually cheat and do this. The whole cube lit up, the same sound as before played, and then there's another sound on our arpeggio that goes all the way up, so it's very sudden. This you win circle, it very clearly says you've won, you've mm-hmm. solved the puzzle. And then these two other things happen at the same time. And this is actually changing modes. So the same way as we went from before the game to in the game, that's a mode transition. You know, watch what happens with the leaderboard, and then this player card comes out. So let's do this one more time. Watch those two things. So the leaderboard comes up, and this player card comes out. And the mode now is really recognizing and recording your action. And so you know, you can type in your name here. And then you'll go ahead and press enter, and then okay. you know, this is your player card. And so this name is the same as on the leaderboard here, right? And it records how long it took you to solve it and how many moves. And we can actually sort by these two things. We can sort by the number of moves, and it happens that the sort is the same here, but you know, maybe you took fewer moves but took
right.
longer, for
now,
example.
Why is mine at the bottom here?
So yours is at the bottom because
okay.
We took the longest. When we sort by time, and also the number of moves, we took the most number of moves. So that's the sort direction. And at the top, you know, of course, it's not fair to compare how long it took you to solve four scrambles compared to 20 scrambles. So there's
right.
kind of different categories of medium and basic and advanced. Even people who are starting out and just doing four scrambles, very basic, they can still be recognized and rewarded. So now, actually, you and I kind of work together on this.
Mm-hmm.
I want to have a little bit of credit too. And you know, we're kind of showing a pattern for larger design when we talk about more than one user. We want to
right.
take into account both the interaction, but also, you know, it's not just a single person on a leaderboard, but one of two people. So we actually have. A button down here on the main panel says Add Player. And so another player card comes out. And so I can go ahead and put my name and watch right there. We have both of us get credit on the same line. And you know, the other thing, it makes sense, you know, if this is where you typed in your name before, that's probably where you're typing your name now. And I'm going to correct you want to be capital J. But watch, you know, we don't have to go through select it and edit and then touch the name
right.
and then go through add and accept and apply and all these other things that are common in GUIs, but this is how we enter our name into the leaderboard. So there's another thing that, and this is, all the things we talked about now are really applicable to Surface and to Windows 7 and any kind of multi-touch GUI.
So natural interface in general.
Right. One thing that's specific to Surface is that these player cards, we can also pull them out by putting down a byte tag. So, you know, we have, say, my business card or ID. I put down this tag. And, you know, we have a new player here, and so this is me. Josh, I'm going to put it 1, just so we're clear that this is a unique one. So I do that, and, you know, I can take off. You know, this will track. So once we make the association between the name and the ID,
mm-hmm.
you know, it'll track it. So it'll follow along. The animation is kind of weird. That's a bug, but it'll follow along, and I can take it off and interact with it normally. So then let's go back and say, you know, we're kind of doing this again in some other way. And you know, once we go to a new game, this is recorded. These are permanent. So we can go ahead and get rid of these. Actually, let's go back to the beginning mode. Let's go ahead and add your player again. So all right, so there you are, James. So, you know, we're working together. Maybe you're playing, mm-hmm. and I come up, and I want to, you know, get in on the game. Then, you know, I can just put down my same card, and I don't have to type in my name again because it already knows it. There's a little bit of intelligence that saves it.
Okay.
You know, based upon the fact that I've already been recorded in the leaderboard. A lot of logic and design has gone on behind the scenes in order to make the minimize the cognitive load on the users. So you don't have to worry about how do I, you know, pick up my name or save it. How do I, you know, update this thing, and how do I interact with this? You know, we want to minimize the cognitive load.
What device did you actually use to develop this?
Okay, so I developed this application when my second daughter was born. I had, you know, paternity leave, and, you know, I also, at the same time, got access to the Surface SDK Workstation Edition, which runs on a regular computer, not a Surface device, and has the simulator, so you can develop applications without the Surface device. This whole entire thing I developed on the simulator, and then at the end I sent it to Josh Wall, and he tested it out on the Surface, and, you know, we kind of had some feedback, you know, back and forth a little bit, but you know, it was kind of cool for me to, you know, my computer with the simulator didn't have multi-touch, although with the simulator, you can have multiple mice connected, okay. and it emulates multi-touch. And that was critical because this is, you know, I have to have multi-touch in order to do this.
So what did you use to try and mimic multi-touch?
So I just connected multiple mice. And actually, in some cases, I had 3 mice. And I was kind of like, you know, mm-hmm. doing multiple things at once. And it was really hard to coordinate. But most of the time, just, you know, 2 mice. And on my desktop, I just made it work, developed it. And so it was cool to be able to send it to someone else with a Surface device and have it, you know, work there the same as on the simulator. So the simulator has some drawbacks because it's not a multi-touch.
Right.
It's for people who don't have multi-touch.
But for the most part, you're able to do a lot of the core development.
Yeah, yeah.
And then go test it on an actual device.
Yeah.
Very nice.
And, you know, with I'm really excited about WPF4 and Windows 7 because that takes all of this SDK stuff from the Surface,
mm-hmm.
and it's evolved and advanced. So and applied for WPF4, and now it's going to be available for millions of developers. So I'm very pumped about that. So relating back to this whole mode transition thing, we have the ability to add players, and so let me just add a whole bunch of players and make a big mess, you know, put these all over the place, and, you know, well, I have to find the control panel, but, you know, say a bunch of people are messing around, and then I say, you know, let's start a new game. Notice, you know, we already talked about how the leaderboard
right.
and this control panel thing moves, but watch how these things go.
Going in a nice little stack for each one.
It totally organizes itself and makes it neat because the application knows that we want to do something different.
You know, and there's a lot of stuff you can do with that. I mean, even if you're building, say, a Monopoly-style game mm-hmm. and you have cards all over the place, yeah, and it's just kind of the natural thing. All right, let's start over, put in a stack, and off we go.
And then these animations, both these ones and at the very beginning, when these two kind of flew out, all these animations have a little bit of randomness into it. So if we started this application two or three times, you know, these things would come out, and within a certain range of motion, they have slightly random positions and slightly random orientations. Yeah. So it's a little bit different each time. And, you know, same thing with this stuff. So these are all kind of different animations. And so we want it to be different and new, but we don't want it to be arbitrary. And that's another right. guideline. So you want to have a little bit of randomness, but not arbitrary randomness. And so these positions don't randomly come out in ways that, you know, wouldn't be useful. It comes out within a certain range, but there's a little bit of differences.
So, Josh, this is some really cool stuff. Tell me about this book that I got wind of. What are you writing?
So, I'm taking all of this experience that we've done at Infostrat, doing Surface and Windows 7 multi-touch development, and I'm kind of distilling it down into a book that's called Multi-Touch Development for Silverlight and WPF. And this book is geared towards developers and really getting them into the mindset of natural user interfaces and all these, you know, the guidelines for Surface, kind of a higher level. How do you do things for any of these devices?
So is this just another SDK book where I go in and it's a reference manual?
It's very much not a reference manual.
Okay.
It's very, the goal is to kind of have the readers read it, and they come away with the knowledge of Silverlight Touch and WPF Touch, but also kind of a new way of thinking, the natural user interface. How do they approach applications? And I hope that after reading it, people will have a whole new way of thinking, approach for developing their applications. So if you want to know more about that, then you can visit the book website at handsonnui.com.
Cool. Well, thanks for taking the time to show me this.
Yeah. So maybe...
still horrible at Rubik's Cube, but hey.
Yeah. Maybe that should be... we should add a tutorial mode. It'll solve itself.